Welcome to KPTZ's Nature Now, a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of kptz.org. Hello, and welcome to Nature Now for the last week of May. My guest and co-host today is Nancy Elder, a fisheries biologist who will be discussing the impact of the Elwha Dam removal on the nearshore habitats off the mouth of the Elwha. But first, as always, here's this week's mystery sound. In nature news this week, we heard from Terry Wagner about a close call in her uptown garden. She was squatting pulling weeds when she heard a loud noise and a whoosh just over her head. She sat up to see three mature deer had just leapt over her.
Close call.
That was a recording of a humpback whale, and we have good news to report. According to Pacific Whale Watch Association, the population of humpbacks in southern British Columbia and northern Washington state, which was locally destroyed by commercial whaling about 20 years ago, is coming back in these waters, and they've actually expanded their temporal use. We're seeing them almost every day out there, sometimes doing spectacular things. In 2015, the number of humpback whales in the Salish Sea has reached its highest documented level. 90 different humpbacks have been photo-identified by Prince of Wales Whale Watch cruises.
That was the call of whimbrels who are passing through our area now, migrating between the Arctic and South America. They are a large seabird with long curving beak and long legs.
The first Swainson's thrushes have arrived in our area from Central America. They are one of very few of our breeding birds that do not generally arrive singing, but rather give a distinctive single liquid note that sounds like wheep. It may be another 2 or 3 weeks before they will start to give their beautiful complex song for which they are so renowned, and here it is.
According to the Olympic National Park website, it's calving season for Roosevelt elks in the Hoh Rainforest and other park areas, and cows can be particularly aggressive. Visitors are reminded to maintain the required distance of at least 50 yards between themselves and any park wildlife.
Speaking of elk in the park, on Saturday I had the pleasure of rafting down the Elwha from above the former Lake Aldwall through the canyon where Glynn's Canyon Dam used to be, and on to near the mouth of the river. It was a fantastic view of the newly freed river and the changes occurring there. On the same trip the day before, a herd of elk had crossed the river right in front of the rafts. If you'd like to go, contact Olympic Raft and Kayak, the only company with permission to raft the Elwha inside the park. Our guest today, Nancy Elder, has spent a lot of time on, in, and under the Elwha River and the Straits of Juan de Fuca, closely studying the aquatic world. She is a fisheries biologist with USGS stationed out of Maristone Island. Her work since 2008 has included dive surveys in the areas of the Elwha near shore to assess the effects of sedimentation pre- and post-dam removal. Welcome, Nancy.
Hi, Kate. I'm excited to be here.
Good. I'm excited to hear about your work. So you started these surveys ahead of time to create a baseline of what was out there. And when was that?
We started our dive surveys in July and August of 2008. And right. We've been going back every year.
Every year since. And why do you do it in July and August?
The reason why we start in July is because we're keeping track of all the species that are out there. And some of them are algae, or basically seaweeds. Mm-hmm. And in July and August, that's when the local seaweeds are pretty much at their maximum growth.
Because they're annuals?
Yes.
Okay. And so you not only took surveys of the animals and the kelp, but also just the lay of the land, so to speak, underwater?
Yes.
And you set transits, or how did that work?
We did random transects in 2008 and 2009, and also starting 2009, we established permanent transects out in the areas that were most likely going to be impacted by the sediment coming out of the river once the dams were gone. We would quantify all of the fish species we encountered, all of the invertebrate species above about 2 centimeters, and also all of the algae species, as well as keeping track of the substrate.
Right. So, as most of us know, the dam came down in stages. So the first dam came down, and tell us about the differences in that, the stages of this.
There were two different dams that were removed. The first one was at the lower Lake Aldwell.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 2012. And the reason why I want to differentiate between the two dam removals is that when they removed the lower dam, the type of sediments that were entrapped by that dam pretty much had only, you know, contained sediments from the lower part of the river. The upper dam contained the larger sediments from the rest of the river. So
right.
It was really two different types of sediments came down. 2012, that lower dam, when it was released, the sediment was a very fine sediment.
Silty-like?
Yeah, silty. It started to deposit stuff, not the same kind of large deposits of sediment that the second dam released.
I see.
And the consistency of it when we were diving was, it was, I think it, if you've seen photos of the plume, it was this really thick, almost like chocolate milk on the surface of the water.
Like mud?
Oh, like mud, yeah. And there were sites that we dove prior to the dam removal where we hardly needed a flash on our camera. And when we went down this time, it was pitch black. It was as black as night down there.
Right. And did it go further out into the straits than you would have anticipated?
Yes. Our geomorphologist people have been
amazed.
Yes, they've been amazed at just the extent of the plume. Yes.
Right. So after the first dam came down, what kind of differences were you seeing out there?
Well, the interesting thing when that first year came down is some of the shallower started to show sediment accumulation, but pretty much the bottom substrate on other sites didn't change at all.
Hmm.
The curious thing, though, was that areas, especially at the mouth and to the east of the river, used to be full of macroalgae. It used to be so thick, we called some sites the salad bowls because there was so much algae out there. And pretty much that first year, we went to sites where there was none.
Zero.
Mm-hmm. Zero algae.
Which impacted many other species. Therefore, none of the algae-dependent species were there either?
Right, yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, obviously, kelp crabs almost went away, and there was a stock jellyfish that attaches on algae and filter feeds by blowing back and forth in the current, and they were gone.
Right. And were there other species that showed up that hadn't been there that first year?
What we found, and I kind of want to stress this, is that there were some species that were gone, but it really, there were other species that came in.
Mm-hmm.
So there were sites a little bit to the west of the river mouth where when this fine sediment comes down, the majority of the larger things kind of go to the east. But you get this back eddy where finer sediments go to the west of the river. And in that first year when that came out, we had an explosion of these filter feeding tube worms at certain sites.
Uh-huh.
We don't know what to expect, and so it's all interesting.
It must be very exciting.
It is exciting to see that.
Uh-huh. And then the second year, when the dam came down, it was a very different story?
Well, I want to say, in that first year, when the substrate was still the same, we had another event that happened, is that I'm with my dive partner, Steve, and we're swimming around, and I came up and I said, Steve, did the rocks look fuzzy to you? And he was like, yeah, and it turns out that when there was no algae covering these rocks, all of a sudden there was an explosion of hydroids growing on them.
Can you describe those?
Hydroids are small invertebrates related to jellyfish, but they're sessile, meaning they are attached to mm-hmm. things. They have little polyps that they filter feed. And there's a whole bunch of different species of okay. them. Some of them are tiny little ones. Other ones are like small fans. They kind of look like fern fronds sticking up.
And they were covering these boulders?
Yeah. Uh-huh. They were covering the boulders. In that same year, we also, all of a sudden, we keep track of all of the invertebrates we
sure.
see.
Uh-huh.
We frequently see nudibranchs.
Sea slugs to some of us?
Yeah, sea slugs. Uh-huh. Like I said, they're like banana slugs with frilly feathers.
Yes, they're beautiful.
They're wonderful species, and we see them, and I always love seeing them.
Uh-huh.
But this year, all of a sudden, we noticed there was a new species, not a brand new species, but a new species to the
survey.
Area. These dendronoted nudibranchs, and they're a beautiful nudibranch. They're mm-hmm. different colors. There's ones that's kind of purple and white, and they're all very frilly.
Are they large?
Some of them range. We don't count anything lower than 2 centimeters, mm-hmm. which is about a little less than an inch, about an inch. But some of them were, anywhere from 2 centimeters up to 5, or uh-huh. I should put this in inches, up to maybe 3-4 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And they were beautiful, and they were just... We noticed them that first year, so that got me wondering, why have we never seen them before? And in looking at these particular species, pretty much the only thing they eat are hydroids.
Evolution in action, huh?
Yeah, and nudibranchs are the type of creatures that are very short-lived. When they hatch, they have a larval form that swims in the water,
mm-hmm.
and they usually only will settle down when they sense another member of its species or its food source.
I see.
So you're not going to find a nudibranch unless...
The food's nearby.
Unless the food. Uh-huh. And there was an explosion of hydroids, and then in 2012 and 13... These nudibranchs went from being zero to comprising almost 60 to 70% of the nudibranch population in the area.
Wow. I bet nobody predicted that.
Yeah.
No, how could you?
You can't predict.
That is great.
We couldn't predict that there'd be hydroids all over these rocks that were bare because there was no algae.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So
then on to the next year when another dam came down. What'd you see?
Well, the interesting thing in that year is that's when the larger sediments started coming down.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, we were seeing a lot of really water-soaked woody debris. We hardly noticed that at all out there before. And then areas were starting to get buried.
Mm-hmm.
We had one dive site right off the mouth that was starting to get buried in 2012. But it was a site that was at a depth of 35 feet, and last year you could almost walk to it.
So this is part of a separate story, but part of a new spit development.
Just
new land being formed, right?
Yeah, and we actually, it's really cool because when we're diving, we'll go out, and there's another site that we've had a permanent transect since 2009.
Mm-hmm.
2012, like I say, it used to be, prior to dam removal, full of algae. 2012, it was still kind of rocks and cobbles, but no algae. 2013, it started to be buried.
Mm-hmm.
Half of it was getting buried, the other half wasn't. And in 2014, it was completely sandy.
Uh-huh.
So I could say the majority of species that used to reside there weren't there, but what we saw was just huge schools of sand lance.
Uh-huh. Tell our listeners who they are.
Sand lance is a really important forage fish in our area. Forage fish means it's a schooling fish that a lot of the larger fish, like salmon, eat. It's mm-hmm. a really important food source. Basically, a forage fish converts the small items in the food chain, mm-hmm. like zooplankton and little things, and they convert it to
right,
a form that the larger fish can eat. They're a common fish in their area. They're very long and skinny.
Mm-hmm.
They go from like 2 inches up to maybe 6 to 8 inches.
And tell us about, sometimes we refer to these gatherings of seagulls on the water. We call them herring balls, but tell me about that.
In the summer, mainly, you look out, you see a whole flock of birds
screaming
on the water.
Birds.
They're just
uh-huh.
screaming, and they're diving into the water. And if you got your binoculars out, what you'd see, these birds come up, and their mouths are full of
sand
fish.
Lance.
A lot of times they are herring, but when we've been out looking, yep, a lot of times they're sand lance.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden in this area off the mouth where we never saw hardly any sand lance, there were just thousands of them, mm-hmm, and schools everywhere. And you could swim. When you're swimming, they just dart up out of the sand. And there were a whole bunch of starry flounder. It's, mm-hmm, a large flat fish that we'd rarely seen out there. And they were feeding on these guys. And we actually saw a lot of marine mammals out swimming around in the area too. And
in river otters or seals? And
we've seen mostly harbor seals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about crabs?
Well, that was the other exciting thing. We had red rock crab out there, but we never really saw Dungeness right at that particular part. And with that sand bank, we could be swimming along and a Dungeness would just boil up out of the sand right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So the change, it's just really exciting change.
To see, yeah. Well, I hope you keep your funding long enough to see these changes go on for years and years. It sounds like such a fascinating spot in your career to be able to be part of this gigantic experiment.
It's really exciting.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I feel really fortunate to actually see it firsthand, literally firsthand.
Underwater. Yeah, literally, you're the first people to see it, you and your partners.
Right.
How fantastic. I know there's so many scientists working there, and there's just this buzz about the river, the science, everything's being learned.
And it's exciting, too, because everyone's cooperating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone. I know we just did a workshop with a whole group of us who are trying to get all of this. We're now trying to get it all published since we've got, uh-huh, 2 years post-dam. And just everyone's working together on this. Everyone's excited. There's government agencies. We have two guys on our team that are tribal biologists. We
bunch of universities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just National Park Service.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have for that interview, but fascinating. Thanks for coming in. I hope we'll bring you in a couple more years and hear the next chapter.
It will be an exciting one.
I'm sure. So here's the mystery sound again. Most of you probably guess seals or sea lions or even sick dogs. Sea lions is the correct answer, and I chose it this week because on Sunday morning when the rowers got to watch one just off Boat Haven, and it was having a hard time swallowing a very large fish. In the news the same day was a story about Astorias marina using a life-size fake orca that moves and makes orca noises to try to scare away sea lions who've taken over their marina. Good luck with that.
In events this week, you can join the Native Plant Society for a slow hike on Hurricane Hill on the Hurricane Ridge Road on Friday, May 29th. If you'd like to learn the wildflowers, this is a great and gorgeous opportunity. Meet at the Olympic National Park Visitor Center in Port Angeles at 10 a.m. if you'd like to go.
So that's it for this episode of Nature Now. We hope you have enjoyed our program of authentic and eclectic news of the natural community where we live. Next week on Nature Now, Mary Robeson will be interviewing Michael Dawson, who's a water expert for all of Jefferson County on water quality in salt and fresh water. The name of the show is What's in Our Waters. Nature Now airs at noon on Wednesdays with repeats here on KPTZ on Thursdays at 5 p.m. and Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. Recent podcasts are also available at kptz.org. And on a personal note, this is my last Nature Now show. It's been a blast. Bye.
Nature Now is produced by Nan Evans and edited by Charlie Fleischman. Production coordinator is Mike Schlexer. Today's closing music is Scuba Scuba by Tangerine Dream.